Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. The discovery of the remains of King Richard III beneath a car parking lot in the English city of Leicester in 2012 sparked excitement around the world. Now, we have been talking with you about getting into the play, Shakespeare's play, King Richard III. But it is interesting that this amazing archaeological find, it took place 527 years after Richard's death at Bosworth Field, which all of you who have been listening to JBL know that happened on August 22nd, 1485. So we played that program that we had taped in England earlier in the summer on August 22nd this year. Now, I've always been fascinated by archaeology. Early in my college career, I took a four-credit archaeology course with lab fieldwork, and actually our class worked to unearth fossils in the Allegheny Mountains of Pennsylvania. And so, but then I soon realized that science just wasn't for me. I'd rather have literature. And so my life as Indiana Jones ended, really pretty quickly. But when we look into the science of archaeology today, it does bring history alive. And certainly when they did this archaeological project to, discover the grave of King Richard, and then they actually found it, history all of a sudden came alive. And even here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, we do have a special student program. It's a work program in conjunction with Dr. Eliot Mazar at the University, at Hebrew University. And our students have actually helped Dr. Mazar unearth, artifacts that really prove the history of the Bible true. And so our work together with her, we've unearthed artifacts such as the seals of Jeremiah's captors, and that project really revealed the history around Jeremiah is absolutely accurate. And so in this case of unearthing the bones of Richard III, archaeological science really did bring his history alive. And we've actually learned some things about it. Now, also, they used the science of DNA research to also bring his history alive, and we've learned more about him. And it is really quite interesting. So today what I want to do is I want to talk about the bones of Richard III and what we've learned about him from those bones. Now, historians believe that William Shakespeare was really unfair in painting Richard as kind of a hunchbacked evil villain. Now, here's some of what Shakespeare wrote in this play, Richard III, and it really is quite interesting. But this is even Richard himself talking about himself very early in the play. And he says, just quite right up front, that he's a villain, but there is this emphasis on his physical deformity. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. But here's what Richard says about himself in the opening soliloquy of the play. It's the only play of Shakespeare that actually opens with a soliloquy. He says, but I, that am not shaped for sportive tricks, nor made to court an amorous-looking glass. In other words, he says there, well, I'm a little ugly. I, that am rudely stamped, and want love's majesty to strut before a wanton ambling nymph. I, that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world, scarce half made up, and that so lamely and unfashionable, that dogs bark at me as I halt by them, why, I, in this weak, piping time of peace. And so here, even Richard III, and again, now Shakespeare wrote this. I mean, Shakespeare is a dramatist. He doesn't know exactly any of the conversations of Richard, but he wrote that for Richard, to Richard to say about himself. So, in other words, he was deformed. If you look at some of the famous movies, or maybe one of the famous movies about Richard III, about this play, Sir Laurence Olivier directed, produced, and acted in a 1955 movie of Richard III, and it really is considered one of the best films on the play. And Olivier acted as Richard III, and it certainly is considered some of his best acting. And I saw this movie over the weekend in preparation for this radio program, and Olivier really did do a marvelous job of portraying what Shakespeare wrote about Richard III. And, I mean, Olivier did a great job of portraying him as an evil, conniving monster. And, of course, he limped around. He had a deformed hand, and he had a hunchback. And so it is really quite interesting. Now, one of the other characters in the play also describes Richard, and this is a scene, it's Act 1, Scene 3, it's line 240. This is where Queen Margaret, who was married to King Henry VI, and she's talking to Queen Elizabeth, who is married to Edward IV. Now, we'll talk about some of this in just a if not this radio program, we'll talk about who these characters are in the next one. But here's what Queen Margaret says. Now, Queen Margaret and her husband were Lancastrian. Queen Elizabeth and her husband are Yorkian. And so you know that that these two families, even though they're related and cousins, fought this bitterly and murdered each other in very bloody battles. But here's what Queen Margaret says to Queen Elizabeth. She calls her, "Poor painted queen, vain flourish of my fortune, why strewed you sugar on that bottled spider?" So she's saying, why are you feeding this spider? And she's talking about Richard III, whose deadly web had snared thee about. Fool, fool, thou whetst a knife to kill yourself. And so she's kind of prophetically saying, well, if you associate with Richard III, you know, you're going to end up, you know, in big trouble. And she goes on to say, "The day will come when you shall wish for me to help thee curse that poisonous bunch-backed toad." And so that's how they refer to, you know, Richard. And it really is, you know, it's quite poetic. It's also quite visual for us. But one thing is there is this book on this archaeological project, and I would like to recommend it to you. It's actually, you know, quite an interesting book. And the title of the book is called, let's see if I can find it here. Yes, the title of the book is called "The Bones of a King, Richard III Rediscovered." And this is by the Gray Friars Research Team. That's a little hard to say. But it is, if you're really interested in archaeological details, this book is just jam-packed full of it. So it is a really good book. You can find it on Amazon for those of you that are Amazon purchasers, and it's really, I don't think it's overly expensive. But let me give you a quote out of this book, and here's what they say. And so when you look at archaeology, you're kind of limited, but yet we can see a lot as well. But this is a quote from the very introduction of the book, and this is what the archaeologists are saying. "We still cannot answer the question of whether Richard III was a villain or a hero, probably because that is the wrong question to ask. Although archaeology can uncover a huge amount of information about his life, health, death, and the manner of his burial, it cannot tell us anything about his personality, his morals, or his character. Even written historical documents and texts cannot reliably help on this most of the time, since even accounts from the time of Richard himself or those written only shortly after his death were certainly not objective and were tainted by the turbulent, morally and politically charged environment in which they were written." And so historically we know that you know, the time of Richard III was not a really good time. It was very much charged politically and morally. And like I said, for those of you who know a little bit about the Wars of the Roses, it was really, really a very bad time period. Now, here's what we do know, and let's just recount a little bit of the history here, is we know that on August 22nd, 1485, King Richard III was killed in the Battle of Bosworth. And like I said, we've already had a program on that. But he was quickly buried at the Greyfriars. That was a kind of like a monastery complex, and it was a Franciscan holy order, and they actually buried him quickly in the friary church. Now, the reason why they buried him quickly, and maybe I shouldn't say it was like as soon as the battle was over, is they did put his body on display for a couple days to show that he was actually dead, and that Henry VII or Henry Tudor or Richmond, as you know, you'll find out in the play, Richmond actually was the king. But they did bury him, and essentially what they did is they buried him in a really small grave. And so what happened then, like 527 years later, the Leicester City Council, the University of Leicester, and the Richard III Society, and these are the Richard III Society, are a group of people, and I'm sure some of it is sponsored by family members, that they believe that Richard got a bad rap. And they even cite, of course, Shakespeare, although Shakespeare wasn't the only one to you know, write negatively about him. But they even cite this Sir Laurence Olivier in his movie in 1955. I mean, they do not like this movie, but it was relatively true to the play. But they wanted to find his remains. And, of course, there was this, they were really fighting history. There was all these things, stories out there that, you know, the people really didn't like Richard, and there was these rebellions, and so they dug up his bones and they threw him, you know, in the River Sauer. But you know, that was never proven. Now, they wanted to find this body. But they had to find the friary first. And this is where, if you're into archaeology and if you're into discovering things or uncovering things or unearthing things, this is where it gets really interesting. So if you look at the city of Leicester today, it is a, you know, it's a modern metropolis. I mean, it's a beautiful city. It's in some of the most beautiful country in England, right there in the Midlands. But they did have to fight some history. You know, under King Henry VIII, remember, he really started the Protestant Reformation in England. And he closed down all the monasteries. So in 1538, he did close down the Greyfriars Monastery. Now, according to history, Richard III was buried somewhere at that monastery. And you know, even statements in history that they knew this grave was there. But what Henry VIII did is he actually dismantled the actual friary. And so in the 1600s and the 1700s, there was evidence there was a tomb. Even King Henry VII, who is Henry Tudor or Richmond, even he embellished the grave and actually put a marble monument in there. And so it's not that you know, Henry Tudor was just as anti-Richard III as some people, or maybe revisionist history, would want us to believe. But in order to find, you know, where this monastery could have been, what this team of archaeologists, and of course they had, you know, professional historians from the university there, what they did is they had to go and get some old medieval maps of the ancient city of Leicester, and they had to see where the friary was, and they had to see where all the buildings were. And from this map and from where the city is today, and they did know where some, let's say, the friary land had changed hands several times, so they knew where parts of it were. But they actually decided that probably Richard III was buried at a car parking lot. And so they really took a chance, and they decided to go ahead and excavate at this parking lot. Now, if you know anything about England, I mean, there's just centuries and thousands of years, you know, of cities building on top of cities, and they were very well documented in their history. So in order to dig anywhere in England, it really is, it is a matter of law, and there's a lot of legalities go into it. And they had to work through this, you know, this whole process. And so they decided, and they finally got the approval then to go ahead and excavate this parking lot. And they were really taking a chance because they just didn't know what was there. But it is interesting that within 5 months, so they started this excavation process around that Battle of Bosworth, the anniversary of that. And then 5 months later, by some great archaeological work and by chance, what they did is they actually found the body of Richard III. And the reason why they knew they found him is they also used DNA evidence. They found relatives, and they actually found a relative of his living in Canada. And they were able to match the DNA, and so they know it's Richard III. And so again, if you get that book, it's really kind of a fascinating study. If you're really interested in archaeology and then unearthing things, so there's a lot of legal things. I mean, to do with this, and so this wasn't necessarily a simple problem that they uncovered. Now, they were given the rights to study the bones, and they did study them, and we have learned. A lot about him. But again, we still can't prove whether he was a villain or not a villain. And I think there's enough history to show that, that Richard III was involved in a lot of the bloodletting and the murders and things that were going on there. But it is kind of interesting that there's one thing that they have learned from looking at his bones. Now, again, if you get that book, the book on the archaeological find, it gives just great color pictures of what they unearthed. They give great color pictures of finding the bones. They have great photographs of, proving how he died. And the one important thing that everybody is kind of, let's say the anti-Shakespeare people, they're really excited to say, one thing we know is Richard III was not hunchbacked. And that they're really excited about that. He was not hunchbacked. And so, but what they did find is that Richard III did have scoliosis. And so if you look at the skeleton, I mean, you can see that it's got a deep curvature in it. And so when you look at this Laurence Olivier player, even if you look at some of the really good plays done by the Royal Shakespeare Company, they always have him limping, and they have one side kind of, deformed. And, of course, the Olivier films, he lifts up his hand, and his hand only has, like, a thumb and two fingers on it. And but that's really not true. His hands were not deformed. He did have scoliosis, and they said that even as a man, that could have been well covered by, just the clothes he wore. In other words, one shoulder may have been slightly higher than the other, but it probably wasn't even that known to people because the royalty was really concerned about how they looked and appeared. But it is kind of interesting. They went back to compare some of the paintings that they have of Richard III, and then they compared the DNA. And some of the way he's been painted is probably not true. And some of the things that they found from the bones is that Richard was probably more blue-eyed and blonde. Now, if you look at that family, if you remember, if you've done your history, and I'm sorry if I'm confusing a little bit for you, but I'm also teaching a class on the War of the Roses here at the college this year. And we're studying the seven history plays, and so this play actually we won't be studying until the end of second semester. So I'm actually covering it with you on the radio at the beginning of the semester when we're just back at Richard II. But some of the history, his great-grandfather, Edward I, was blonde-haired, blue-eyed. And so he probably had some of those same traits. And if you look at even like Sir Laurence Olivier, the film, they always paint him with black hair. And in the film, he's always wearing black, all the black clothing. So they wanted to make him look as black as they could. But there's a good chance that actually he was blue-eyed and blonde. And so he probably wouldn't look as bad as even some of the paintings make him look. But it is also interesting that they did find out some things from just studying his bones, and they know that he had a very rich diet. I mean, it was a healthy diet for a while, and they even have historical records of, you know, when he was crowned king. Of course, they had this big celebration, and of course, at that celebration, they had peacock and swan, and they had fish and carp and pike and so on. So even his bones show that he had a very healthy diet. And so certainly the wealthy people at that time would have had it. So that's also very interesting. But they also know that he had worms when he died. And so if that, hopefully that doesn't gross you out. But that was from his rich diet, and he's probably eating, you know, some bad cuts of meat. And so he did have a roundworm infection when he died. Now, it's interesting is that when they found his body, it was in a roughly hewn grave, and it was really small for the body, so they kind of smashed the body in there. And the position of the body, it shows that his hands were tied. So that does show that he was, in a violent situation. They also, if you look at his bones, they also know that he died violently, and they can see these 11 deep wounds into his bones. And so it is kind of amazing. 9 of these wounds are to the skull, and 2 are to the other parts of the body, 1 in his spine and 1 in his pelvis area. So if you really want to get, like I said, into some of the gruesomeness, the book explains how it probably happened. But it looks like, I mean, he was hit by some pretty heavy pieces of war equipment, which they were using at that time. So like half of the back of his skull is gone. And then he has this big indention in his forehead. And then if you look at the rest of the bone, he's got a deep cut in one of his ribs. So I mean, he was killed instantly. But also what the archaeologists say, that it looks like his body was subject to ritual humiliation after his death. And that was common when you're in a battlefield like the Battle of Bosworth Field. And if you have an opportunity to go back, get on to kpcg.fm and go back and listen to that program where Richard Palmer talks about this battle. And you can see why he had so many of these wounds. And so, you know, there was this horrible problem for him. But eventually, after working out some legal things and after their study, and everything is documented in these books, there's even a couple, let's say, documentaries on this that you could even look up for yourself. But there was this big controversy over where they were going to rebury him. And of course, the Richard III Society wanted him buried, maybe even in Westminster. But Richard was also a Catholic, and of course that did preclude that he could not be buried at Westminster, and so the Queen would not agree to that. But they finally did decide that Richard III would be reburied in a royal burial at Leicester Cathedral. And I shouldn't say Leicester, it's Leicester. You, when you look at it, I mean, we cannot look at it from American eyes. We have to look at it from English eyes, and it's Leicester. So he's actually buried at Leicester Cathedral. And if you look at it, they gave him this really kind of royal funeral. And they actually, you know, it reminds me of a lot of when Diana was buried. They had him on a horse-drawn cart, And they actually took him past Ambien Hill, and they took him past the battlefield. And so the people in the Richard III Society really feel he's been honorably buried again. And so that is all fascinating history. And I hope you really enjoyed this. But you can look up more for yourself, even get online. It's easy to find these things. But Richard III is a living character from history. And, of course, this play helps really bring out, some of the things he was certainly involved in. But it brings out the horrible situation at the War of the Roses. And, of course, Henry Tudor does come in and save the day, and the actual fighting stops. So next time, what I plan to do is I plan to discuss the characters in Richard III. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1 and on Facebook at facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.